This session is from the 2021 Shepherd's 360 International Church Leaders Conference. For more information, visit shepherds360.org.
But today, what we want to talk about is we call it expectations across traditions. But you know, really, what birthed this was our experience of what we're seeing from churches around the U.S. coming out of the pandemic, and then as we're going into looking forward in 2021, 2022, 2023, all that, what are those expectations people are coming with? So when we say we're coming back to church, we're getting back together, we want to reach this next generation, what does that look like? So as I mentioned, we're ATH Architects. We're an architecture firm that works out of Dallas, Texas, and we work all over the U.S., with not just churches, but, faith-based projects, whether it's a nonprofit, Salvation Army, Dallas Life, homeless shelter, private Christian schools, and then other projects, some municipalities, commercial architecture, hospitality. So we have a wide range of what we've been able to see. And I think the question that we really have to ask ourselves is very important, because it really gets back to architecture's space. It's just design of buildings. But when you talk about church, when you talk about ministry, the important question really gets into the strategic vision, like Dr. Wilton says, the professor of Church Spartanburg. Strategic vision of how you want to do ministry is what drives everything forward, because one of the things that we truly believe and what we've seen is to have the greatest impact, your ministry has to drive your space. If you let the space that you're currently in drive your ministry, you're always going to have those limitations. So we always come back to, you want to make sure you have that vision, you have that ministry plan for moving forward in terms of the space you want to create.
By the way, do y'all come as members of your church, or are you on staff in any way, or involved in any kind of leadership with your church?
My husband's a pastor. And
okay, that means you're in.
We'll go ahead and check that box.
He wanted to go to another seminar, so I'll come here.
Yeah, and then are you?
My husband's a retired pastor. We're out doing missions now. We're back at the same church attending it.
Okay.
I don't know how much impact I have, but
I'm sure you do. If you've been, okay. I just thought, because we can address some things, like if there's any particular things that y'all have coming from
that. We got you. Sorry about that.
Coming from a staff position or something that, or a leadership position. Because that's a lot of what this is. That's usually what we're working with, is staff.
And so we talk about coming out of. The last 18 months or so, it's like, well, how do we respond? Because we always want to make sure that we are responding and not just reacting, the difference, one is emotional. The other is thinking through and having a plan and then moving forward. And so, the question comes up is will church be different? And the answer is yes and no. I mean, it's doing church is consistent, and there are still things where people want to come, they still want to fellowship, but then there also are differences where we now have a online mission field. What does that look like? How do you bridge digital and the physical and have a unified church, and those people that we're able to reach online, bring them in person so that you actually can have that physical connection, that interaction, because this only cuts a person long. We crave that physical social interaction that we get in person.
Which we've had a couple of clients, oddly enough, say, boy, we've just grown so much online. I've only had a couple I've had this conversation with, but interesting enough, and of course, because we cover a different, we cover a perspective on a lot of different thoughts as what we, how we get involved in church. But we've had a couple of clients say, man, we just think we're just going to go mostly all digital. Wow, you've got a great teaching moment in Hebrews 10:25.
Really?
Because I said, if you read some of that, it's like,
forsaken the assembly, for which it's kind of a habit for some of you, roughly, is what the teaching is. And because I had a good friend that was dealing with that same thing.
Because that is, you know, what role do facilities play? I mean, I skipped over it a little bit, but yes, you have physical space that's required to facilitate the online. You have physical space that's required to receive those people and the marriage of those two, because church isn't, I mean, God's anywhere. He's under a tree. He's wherever we want him to be. You know, he can be here, but you also need this to build the body of Christ. And that's how you share the gospel in a personal way. You bring in people for discipleship and you grow that next generation. So that is very important, to still have physical space to bring people to.
Because think about it, you know, what probably never before has there been such a potential on-ramp for people in the church coming out of this COVID. As some people, maybe just because they had a little bit of fear, maybe they experienced some death or maybe we're doing whatever, but it caused them to go, you know, maybe I need to reach out to someone. Some, clearly, I think we've kind of heard across the nation, the church probably lost some cultural Christians. You know, they kind of got comfortable on Sundays, I'll just be in pajamas in bed. Maybe, you know, and I can do this online and I'm good at that. And so they've distanced themselves. But there'll be others that have said, hey, I may have found you online. Yeah, at some point, how do I get engaged? Then they are going to come with expectations. It may be unanticipated expectations, but they may become with little expectations, or they may become with great. They've ever been involved in the church. They've been out of it for a while. They've been in church. Their church didn't have a great online presence. They sought some other avenues during that time, got linked up. Now they want to come visit that church, so they may bring off. You know, there's just a variety of things you could pin. What we've generally seen, if you even with outside the pandemic, is when people come, they typically come with expectations. And so at that point, you become a measure in your mind. You should think of always that first time experience, not forgetting your members, but your guests, on what are the impressions that would cause them to walk into a facility and say, wow, they did this for me and my family and mine, versus our other church was better, you know, or something like that. Or this church doesn't look like it fosters young families like I have, you know, those things.
it does play in, I think. So four of the areas that we have found that pretty much cut across all worship traditions, that cut across all areas of the U.S., you know, really can be summed up in, you know, first one, focus on community. You know, what do we mean by that? It's the community of the church body itself. So it's having those spaces that facilitate those interactions. It facilitates those one-on-ones. It facilitates, you know, the ministry that actually serves those needs. It's actually community in the larger context of where you sit, the area you serve, your mission field, your particular marketplace where you're located, and building those places that facilitate that third place. I'm sure it's a concept you may be familiar with, but it provides opportunities throughout the week. So it's not just an hour on Sunday. It's throughout the week. It's actually providing that beacon for, you know, people to come. And it really puts a focus back on the missional aspect of what we do.
And I think that is one thing we've seen in the last year and a half, whatever, where they started, when everybody split and, you know, we turned off the lights at the church. The church immediately began to question, when will people come back? How will they come back? What if they don't come? All those are first things, but what can we do to engage them to come back on campus? And I think it's again, a time that the church used this as an opportunity to, how can we influence community and get community back on our campus? Not just, as Mark said, not just on the weekends, but throughout the week. So we're to some degree, think 24/7. And so we're all familiar with things like collab, work labs, share labs, all that. Your company. That's one of the things that we've seen a few churches very successfully pick up. They got a huge hospitality space. Why would some of these people, when they went home and their businesses allowed them to work at home, or maybe they still need an office, but maybe their office isn't open, so they go open up a work lab space. Why do they have to pay rent for that when the church could offer them that at roughly no cost, right? Then they come and sit in a hospitality with a cafe. And so we've seen that with several of ours. They've got people sitting in their Monday through Friday, sitting in their building, and they don't really know who they are. But that's serving the community.
And a little bit of this is a pushback against what we saw maybe over the last 8 to 10 years, where it became more performance-driven. And then was about coming to Womany to get something, but now it's a desire to participate. The second one, and then we'll have some case study examples that we can go through after we talk about quickly this broad process. The second one is basically, it's going to more of that neighborhood church. So you're actually seeing churches moving into the areas where their people are. And it's a purposeful targeting their particular demographic and then going in. And whether it's a plant, whether it's a multi-site, but it's going in.
Or a startup.
Where people are. So instead of, hey, we're going to do this, you know, regional church that's going to be a Mecca where everyone's going to come to us, we're going to them. And so it's just being very purposeful and intentional in where you choose to locate, how you choose to reach those people. And that really does get back to plugging into the community and having that service mindset of, you know, here we are going into the mission field and proclaiming the gospel to bring people in.
And that's where, and you'll see through some of these things that we'll get to, where clearly the church generally has the basic same concept of what they're intending to do, obviously spread the gospel, foster, you know, worship service, all those things. But understanding what that looks like in Covington, Virginia versus Dallas, Texas versus Seattle, you know, whatever, the Seattle?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's where then the church has to go, hey, we are in this place uniquely to do what as a church? Recently was talking with a congregation or a client. They clearly understood, and it's in the Dallas area, oddly enough, in a very developed area, a high-income area. But they said, you know what? When we walk in, like, where's all the nursery preschool? Yeah, we don't really have that. Wow. As a demographic, to openly admit we're not reaching in families. But they were growing. They were just growing in an upper range and reaching the people. They were just reaching their younger folks were in the 40s. And they just knew that. But they were also growing because their teaching pastor and those relationships. Maybe a little bit of anomaly, but they knew who they were and they knew what their target audience was.
Which leads into the desire for an experience. And that's not just in the worship setting. That's not just, you know, Bible studies. I mean, that is, when you think about, you know, a good example that comes to mind is Disney. When you go to visit Disney, you are fully immersed in that experience and what you take from that. And people are seeking that. They're wanting to, from the moment they go online and they read about your particular you know, brand messaging and what you offer, and then when they come on site, when they drive up, what they see, they get on campus, they walk in the doors. How they're greeted, is it intuitive flow? Is it the common space? Is it facilitate hospitality? You know, that is very important in terms of the influences it provides on those experiences and whether they feel connected, whether they feel like that's their.
Yeah. So don't hear we're talking about an artificial experience like, oh, we're here to, we got 3 days here at Disney and it's going to be all about just receiving all this stuff. It is a real. And you know, that's where facilities do come into play because they're fostering that environment where, right? If they walk in and go like, this church looks better online, that'd be the worst thing. That'd be like, you know, instead of going to Disney, you go to another resort and it looked better online when you got there, right? Like, I thought we were going to be on the beach and have this great view. It's not what, that's what sometimes happens. We hear from time that why were they losing? Well, when they talked to their people there and, or they looked around, yeah, our facilities don't really foster a great family environment. Or the things that speak who we want. Disney probably does that no better than anybody else as far as creating that continual experience, right?
You know, another one, think of Starbucks. What made them so popular, or your local coffee houses? It wasn't just getting a cup of coffee. It's like you're going to this casual, relaxed environment.
Where culture.
You're, it's culture. You know, you sit and you hang out. It's not really about the coffee because, I mean, if you like coffee, I'm sure Starbucks is good coffee, but it's about what you can do when you... You're in there with friends. You're hanging out. You're conversing. It's not so. I mean, that's why you pay $5 for some hot water. I'm not a coffee drinker, so I.
But what it did, you know what it did do? And this, y'all probably have heard the stories about this years ago when they actually did studies. Probably been a decade ago. But you know what happened when Starbucks and some of the coffee houses like that came up? Probably specifically that one because it was part of the leader in creating that environment on a global basis. What one study they did. Y'all have 7-Elevens?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What happened to 7-Elevens?
7-Eleven was meant to be a, right, come in, please get your stuff and leave, right? A copy. It was not about the experience. It was just like, hey, we'll get cooked out, we'll get cooked out. Convenience and all that. Well, what happened? They saw their sales decline in coffee. They're going, man, Starbucks is killing our coffee business. No. What was their response? They upped their cost, tripled their cost on coffee.
Really?
Because people psychologically go, I want that experience. I'm willing to pay for that. That can't be a good cup of coffee from a gas station, from a convenience store, but I'll go over this. They're in the business of cup. You don't, you know, but that's what happened. And then their sales went back up.
Wow.
Because they tripled their cost because people associated like,
oh,
there you go.
A lot of good product.
And or the environment, right? There you go. So 7-Eleven loved. They 7-Eleven loved what Starbucks did to their coffee business.
And then the fourth one that we wanted to highlight was just a need for flexibility, and really another word you can interchange with that is just adaptability. Because I think one of the things we all learned over the last 18 months is, you know, we got to learn how to pivot on the fly. You know, how do we leverage our outdoor space that allows people to still come together? You know, what can we do within our, like, say some of the older facilities, that's the double loaded corridor classrooms. How do we still have small groups that allow for
immediate expansion to four times that size?
Yes, or shrink comfort for space, or how do we create the hospitality space that maybe doesn't exist? And it gets back into using our facilities for more than that, you know, 1 or 2 hours on a Sunday. What can we do to make it more of that community draw, that community center where people come onto campus and you take away those barriers, create those on-roads so that it they might, you know, they might not otherwise don the door of a church, but they'll come because there's a coffee shop or because you've opened up your commons area with free Wi-Fi for the business community to come in during the week because they're working remote. They're tired of their living room. Maybe they can come to
I think it's just that downstairs. Natural expansion of we serve clearly. The church has its kind of predefined areas of service. That doesn't mean the church can't serve in a lot of other areas. And obviously we've seen that, but sometimes those desire to serve in other areas are not facilitated very well within their existing facilities because they've never had a concept that mind to do that. Now we want to do this. What kind of space would we need to allow for that flexibility or allow for that unique service that happens during the week, but doesn't happen on the weekends, right? But we want that space. So
now we want to just kind of go through a couple of projects just to more show you specifically what we're talking about, because, you know, we are architects, we are creatives, and we are visual. We're not always as eloquent with our words as we should be. This is a church that's in Oxford, Mississippi, and it's actually the sixth campus for Pine Lake. And they basically saw a need for, you know, basically a new campus in that college setting because they wanted to reach that particular demographic. And so this was a facility, 900 seater, some education space, but, you know, going into that community and because it's a college community, creating space that utilizes, there was that large green event lawn in the front where they could have events, you know, students are used to, you know, tailgating and all those kind of things on game day, being able to provide those type of opportunities. Plazas that lets it spill out, taking advantage of just the setting. If you're familiar with Ole Miss, there's
the Grove, one of their
particular pieces with all these beautiful oak trees. It's like recreating some of that same feel, large open spaces, having the expected amenities, like a coffee bar that would serve throughout the week, a tunable room that would use technology to actually have multiple events. You know, a flat floor with terrace seating that allows them to use that space for more than just service, and just creating areas that, whether it's Bible study on the weekend, or it's conferences during the week, or it's remote learning or other pieces through the campus, that allows this to become that 7 days a week, you know, 365 days a year type of space, and just gets people on campus, but just each age group having specific pieces that reach out and speak to them so that everyone feels welcome.
Yeah, if you go back to that previous slide, this is one of the unique things that this room really would
be designed around two primary things: children's worship, our children's assembly, and then they do have other classrooms. Or in a moment's notice, for weekend they got more people than they could sit in that 900 seat room. We don't have a children's assembly this morning. It's an overflow room. They don't think anything about it. They just adapt on the fly. That's a 300 seat facility, and it's upstairs. But that we've got it designed where the crowd can go upstairs, not breach children's preschool or children's area, and immediately on a Sunday morning adapt and go, hey, we just have to have a large, because they run typically on their campus. They'll run 2-3 services per each thing, but they've kind of limited the room size to 100,000, but then they'll do it multiple times. But we were in the middle of designing this during COVID, and they started this during COVID. They already knew that we had this line. We had this say we want to move into, this town we want to move into. In fact, during design, they said, we hope we're not building too small, because they had reached 50,000 new people online. There were a lot of them becoming regular attenders because they kind of cover the state of Mississippi with different campuses. So very, very strategic thinking in where they land a church and all that. But yeah, that's one of those where you rarely would you have a room that goes from children's assembly in 1 hour and it goes to overflow and worship in the next.
Technology is your friend.
Yeah.
This is a church. It's kind of in the Dallas area. It's a little bit south of Waxahachie, but it's the avenue. And they actually saw a need for the community to really create a venue, a coffee house, so to speak, that would be open to the community. They had a existing splash pad, an existing outdoor basketball court. They have a walking trail that goes around this pond, and it's actually actively used. They say, hey, wouldn't it be great if we had the opportunity to come in and build this coffee house that would just provide a missing amenity for the community and actually be on campus?
The church literally sits behind a retail restaurant area. So it's just natural people where people come in shopping and eating, and then they can go to church in this park.
So it allowed for that missing amenity, but they really do it all. And then with the indoor play, with the children's space that's right there, it had that young mom appeal where, hey, you know what? You need to get your kids out of the house. Well, here we have this opportunity for you to come in and you can use our indoor play. You can enjoy, social fellowship with friends and have that
indoor-outdoor experience. They can be inside, outside. So they've taken advantage of that community and saw, I think that's a lot of times it's that strategic, how can we do things in this given community, this given setting? Very simple warehousey type of church in some ways.
This is another multi-site that's for a church in the Dallas area again, but growing church, and they actually saw a need that they weren't hitting they were over capacity in that young family, young professional demographic. And so there was an opportunity for this is a revitalization renovation of, it was a school.
Well, it was first a family fitness center, like a 24-hour fitness center. Had a big Olympic swimming pool in it, all the three-story building. It later got converted to a private school, and then that went out, and the church took it over. So it's got all these different levels in it, a little pool.
But specifically targeting that young family, 20s, 30s, that millennial Gen Z demographic, and giving them that coffee house vibe, that what they're looking for in terms of the amenities, the texture.
It's about
the openness, the transparency.
It's about a 400-500 seater on campus within the street with a 3-story building.
And just making sure they have those pieces that again provide those spaces for.
Yeah, this was one of the ones where you could come in and take over a building that wasn't designed for a church, 3 stories on, and they're not all like solid 3 stories, kind of steps up and down. You have a lot of changes, but only about a mile and a half from their existing campus, too. You go, well, how would that not compete with your main campus? But it was just that they didn't have to do any site work. And all we did was come in and gut the building and still
move. And honestly, that got back into targeting some of that neighborhood feel. They noticed when they were looking, it's like with the way the city's laid out, there was a huge pocket of people that were driving all the way across town to come over to the main campus. It's like, well,
let's not load it.
And we can offload that, and then we can actually serve that community and let that local community come together as fellowship. This is a church in Virginia. It's just, I think it's Ashburn.
Ashburn.
And they had all
about Loudoun County, one of our Loudoun County churches, if you've seen that on the news line.
Yeah. They'd always been in a warehouse, like it, you know, like the big data center type of thing. And so they were wanting to move out to where their people were. Because again, where they were, people were driving across town. So like, hey, you know, we notice our demographic is all the way over here. Let's move to where they are. And so they built a facility that's in that growing area of Loudoun County and just wanted to speak to those expectations, not only of the local community, but also of the culture of their particular church, because they'd been in a warehouse, because of the people that were coming, like the industries they worked in. They wanted it to be very simple, very straightforward. They wanted
almost a commercial look.
Yeah, a little bit of that commercial retail, have some of that industrial feel to it. But having spaces with the cafe that spills out onto an outdoor plaza, the outdoor play, it's in a beautiful area that actually
we just opened this. We don't have a lot of good photos yet of it.
Having the flexible venue again with the flat floor and the terrace seats to allow for whether it's a worship service, it's a conference setting, or the actual worship minister here comes out of the English music scene and concerts, because he has a lot of his buddies that would come and would play. So this is actually set up to be able to facilitate those type of performance events as well. And this is actually photo during
construction.
Good. It's just the sense of the openness of the space, the intuitive flow, being able to walk in, see where you need to go. The connection to the exterior is very important. Just to have that sense of there's something serene about being able to see.
As a park they had joined to with the running trails. Very specific. We did two side analysis. They had us looking in two different areas. Loudoun County is, if you know anything about Loudoun County, Loudoun County and Fairfax County, suburbs of Washington, D.C.
Another state.
Yeah. What are the two facts about Loudoun County and Fairfax County in the last few years? Highest, fastest growing counties and highest income per capita. Tells you a lot about our government. Because they're all based on governmental. That's right. You don't work for the government, you work for the government via a third party contractor. And it's a lot of money, high wealth area. But they were actually able to purchase this site. We did a couple of studies on when we built this, it was two lane roads. We went back out there for our grand opening, just over the course of a two and a half year design and construction. The entire town has exploded with just restaurants, retail, divided highways. Everything's brand new. It's called One Loudoun area. But that whole area, very strategic. They sold a 300,000 square foot building, bought a property, paid cash for it out of the sale of this other data center where they had a school comp split, and then bought that property and built the building. They have $1 million worth of debt. That could build about a $25, $30 million building. So very strategic on, hey, what do we want to do to go get into an area that we know the people are coming?
Yeah, we were talking earlier about Grace Bible and College Station. This is actually the Creekside campus that we just recently opened. This was the master plan for the site. They actually saw a need for, I think they had, this was their fourth campus?
Third.
Their main campus is right there by the college. They had another, Bryan, and then they saw a need for young families that were in this northern end of College Station. And so this was their ground up facility for them, planning for their worship, and had built an expansion and had the hospitality space, you know, the children's preschool for the future youth, and then, you know, some sports fields. But there was this natural creek line, water spillway that actually ran through the site, that is where the term Creekside came from.
Well, and a little bit about the site. First of all, if you're your Shepherd Seminary, this is one of the branch campuses. Actually, at the other one, at the Texas A&M, at the main one across from the college. But if you back up just for a moment on one side, when we came to this site, Major Highway, they're out serving the families, right? The people who moved on the outskirts of town, brand new neighborhoods and all that. This was a 100% wooded site that's down in the floodplain with the ball fields down there. And you also, of course, have this lovely oil and gas plant right in the middle of your 54 acres that we needed to protect around. So, like I say, when we walked the site and saw that creek, we also knew this was going to be retail, which means forward-facing facilities, service side of a building. We'll just leave that. We'll turn around and place the face back of our facilities that way and have 100% facing facilities toward the creek. So, all right.
very purposeful to leverage that site because it was a natural base site. We're there. You know, how do we plan for in the future as we continue to grow to enhance that, to create opportunities outside where we can spill out, whether it's fire pits, it's outdoor Bible study fellowship areas, it's creating these walking trails, places where you can have a moment of reflection, just to really leverage the outdoor space as an extension of your facility, because really it creates that experience to where once you come on site and as you park, coming into the facility, you're crossing through ultimately.
You know, a footbridge is to get.
So this was a rendering for, you know, glass across the front that really would front out on that, have the hospitality space. How that starts to interact with, you know, the landscape, the exterior, really giving that opportunity for the church family to fellowship.
And the desire to have outside space was heightened during COVID. We've been talking about it a long time. You know, you drive a lot of major metro plants, you look down in people's backyard, what do you see? They spend a lot of money in their backyard, right? A lot of outdoor kitchens and pools. So why not? Why would we not want to have that same type of family environment at the church? Well, that's taking advantage. So now it's how you, now just not creating a landscape, but hey, we intend for you to come early and stay late. Come be on our campus and bring a picnic after month or after church.
Well, and using the using glass, using transparency, using, you know, natural tones, palettes with stone, with wood, just to appeal to that, you know, that modern sense, that that, you know, it's home, it's a little bit more comfortable, it's casual.
This is obviously right after construction, so they don't have any landscaping in the creek. They're just beginning to get it washed. But
yeah, they actually just opened.
Yeah, they, yeah.
Education space. Again, being able to spill outside. And so it's just really seeing that as that opportunity that I think in the past has been overlooked.
Yeah, and so if you notice the, like, the title of this particular presentation, I guess what we thought was just reaching across traditions. Some people walk into church like they go, that ain't the church I grew up in. All right. That's not the look and feel of a church. It's not red brick, white columns, rocket ship on top. Does the church have to be that look traditionally? And I think what we're saying is no, the church is just a building. It needs to foster whatever community that makes sense for that setting and all that. In that case, take advantage of that beautiful side. Why would we make an enclosed building where you could enjoy the outside?
I want to speak to your particular DNA.
Yeah.
This is this Cleveland, Tennessee. Where they make, I think, Mars candy. The factory there, so they always have free candy around. But when we met with this particular group, what we tasked with is, you know, the pastor said, I want this to be, you know, obviously, like everyone said, I want this to be a standout facility. I want this. You know, he had this list of things. And then he basically said, I do not want it to be just your typical cookie cutter classroom space with connecting corridors. I want to create an experience. I want this to be, you know, our Jerusalem that calls people to worship. So what he was meaning is he wants this to become that cultural center of the community. And so
it's in the Appalachian Mountains. You can't, I mean, it's beautiful. The views for the side are incredible.
So using stone, using glass, transparency, creating those open spaces, leveraging the walk up, the, you know, how do we celebrate the children's ministry, the children's space, how do we celebrate the worship? So having, like, the what you see on the second floor up there, it's just this glass facade that morphically bends around and just puts the children's space on display.
Up there over near the Appalachian Mountains, because he wanted it to feel like, hey, so, we're in the mountains, we're on the trail.
Not only do you see it as you're walking in, but also when you're in that space looking out, you get to have that vista. Same thing within the worship, which you'll see in a second, is large glass cases on the side that allow that same interaction. Really creating hospitality space with the just encourage movement, the seating areas, the stone, baptistry element, which is what that tower piece is in the center, cafe, hospitality space, just having those amenities that the community already sees the everyday life, and so they come with those expectations.
One of the easiest things I think we liken it to, and I'm probably listening offensive, but is think hotel hospitality, think hotel lobby. You got a group of people coming there. Yeah, they're staying at this place, but there's also a commons area. Sometimes they know each other. Sometimes they get a lot of people in the same space. They don't know each other. But how to create that space where you feel comfortable being in a group, but where you could sit down, you could have a conversation. And just like when you're at a hotel resort, sometimes you just kind of want to get out and go sit in the lobby with a view, whatever, and enjoy a meal or enjoy a cup of coffee or in a place to just have conversations. Sometimes churches are lacking that place where, please come stay for a while, let us get to know you. It just becomes this myriad of corridors or not a place that's fostering hospitality, right? And we'd like to think that fellowship is a good part of what we do in a church. So you need a space that fosters where people would desire to be. This, again, is a collab work space.
Boy, and that's what I was referring to a little bit earlier when I said it's a test on performance. And it's not to say that people don't see that, but it was a little bit of the, we want to get you out because we got to turn it over. So yeah. It's like, you know, we encourage fellowship, we encourage all that, but you know, it's not here, so we got to get the next group in. So it's providing those spaces that allow that transition and that turnover to happen, but it still also allows that fellowship, because one of the things we have found that plays into the community, plays into the experience, this came up a little bit yesterday, the worship experience is still very important. People are coming to worship, but the fellowship is also becoming just as equivalent in terms of desire and in terms of importance. So like when you have, because both in tandem is when you really have that synergy that I think creates that discipleship, creates that interaction, creates that overall experience that people are looking for.
Yeah, and you want technology, but we don't want to communicate like this when it comes to church. We want to have normal conversations. So having those spaces, that lobby area, it really, it's probably the one lacking space we see in most campuses in today's, I'll say, expectations across a campus.
This is about 100. So the interesting thing here is, like, how do you build a space that's, you know, 2,500 seats is still intimate? And a lot of that gets into the seats, the flow, the roll up, the taking advantage of the natural island size and just really giving that sense of intimacy, but still within a larger space.
One of the things I was also going to say about hospitality, one of the things that's happened with, I'll say at least the millennials, Gen Zs, is there's actually a desire to be back to, if I'm in the youth group, I don't want to be down at the other end of campus, like not seen, not heard, right? And then nursery preschool is down at the other end, not seen, not heard, or whatever. There's a desire to have all ages, all cultures, all ethnicities, all that coming together, because that's more of walking the talk of the church, right? Hey, and there's times when I think we, you know, everybody was like, they'd arrive at church 3 hours later, they'd, you know, re come together as a family and go home. And there's that's really, I think that there's one positive that's come out of the last couple generations was that desire to, hey, we want to come to church with your family. We want to see that. So that those spaces, that hospitality is meant to serve all eight. It's not, well, that's the adult hospitality area. Your preschool lobby's down there. And, oh, you'll be out across the parking lot. You'll have your own hangout space over there. Churches, that they really wanted to get away from that splitting out. Coming back together is important.
Well, and I will say, we talked a little bit yesterday about generations, and not to dive too far into that, but like my kids, I have four kids under 10, and I have actually been asked by my 8-year-old why her Sunday school class doesn't look like her everyday class that she goes to school. And so, you know, that is something that as we move forward, to Bruce's point, people are wanting to see the church reflect the community they live in. And so creating spaces that encourage that, that break down some of those barriers are very important as we move forward. The last one we want to talk about, this is a church startup that actually is in the Dallas area. It's right there, if you're familiar with Dallas, at George Bush the 75. So it's this grand entry corridor into Richardson.
About half a mile from our office.
right across the street is this huge development where State Farm moved in. So it's prime center. So this church had an opportunity to really create, become that gateway, part of that gateway into the community.
community. So this is the master plan for this facility. The first phase that we'll show you pictures for is this piece here. And then as they grow, it moves in with additional education, you know, worship, and then, you know, whether it's the
It fronts the trail right now. We currently have the DART train coming. This is, if you're familiar, that's again Central Expressway, about 14 lanes coming through here. George Bush, right here, big tollway. The train is coming down and it's about to cut across the interstate. Yeah, they're going out and fly through this woods and come across and go down through the trail. So on my part, they'll still own this part of the property, but and nothing like a beautiful creek, probably 30 foot deep rock creek and trails right on an two interstates, a beautiful site. A startup church was fortunate to have some people go and purchase that prop, that 31 acres. And we have a vision to be a dynamic gateway church to the city. That's where Plano becomes Richardson.
This is our initial concept in working with those guys. And then as we get into the actual facility, these were the presentation materials. But then what got built for that phase one, go back from the intersection in terms of what you see. So you have that glass that wraps around. You have this vertical element. There's actual colored lighting that runs along the fascia and down that piece. So at night, it's lit to a cross. And it's actually color changing. So he has this piece that can be a color, and then this can either complement or be the same color. But it really...
It was a landmark facility from two facilities. It's lit up with a cross.
Now a skyline, you know, we like tracing everything. So yeah. We brought a little bit of that here. But having that hospitality space, so there's, you know, the six-lane highway, George Bush, that Bruce is talking about, but that...
There's the 14 lane central.
You can see out having those spaces.
There's George Bush in the beyond.
And so I think one of the things we like to encourage is, like, when you go back, you know, Bruce mentioned it earlier, next time you visit your campus, get that mindset of you're a first-time guest. You know, what is that experience? What is, you know, when you walk in the doors, you know, do you have that sense of hospitality? Do you have that sense of welcome? Is it intuitive in terms of flow? And really start to evaluate, are your facilities really meeting the expectations of people you're targeting? You know, the community, do you reflect your community, not only of the church, but the, you know, the community in the context where you are? Because it's very important, you know, to be congruent in that messaging and speak that language, because people pick that up.
The buildings do speak language, right? Nobody, doesn't matter if you're a restaurant, retail center, hotel, office building, church. Why would we be any different? Your building is speaking language. It could be speaking a bad language, not at all reflective of your ministries and the people inside. And Mark just said that term congruent may be speaking a non-congruent message. It speaks this over here. It speaks a different language inside. You walk down this wing, it speaks a different language. That's a very confusing in today's world because they probably already checked you out on site to some degree before they don the doors of your church. And then when they walk in, if it's a non-intuitive, confusing message, your facilities are becoming a distraction, not an enhancement to your facility. We can promise you that. We've seen that over and over. When a church has hit a decline and they're really like realizing their facility may be playing a role in that, it's like, yeah, it's one of these things we just talk. It's not speaking the language. It's not addressed. It's not meeting the expectations. If someone walks in and the last time they see carpet, they can clearly go, yeah, it's probably a 1980, 85 building. The carpet's never been changed. In our world, means, and what we've heard from others, when you kind of do the secret shopper, what do you believe most people think when they walk in and see carpet and been replaced in 30 years? Nothing good could be happening. Who wants that in their church? Or when you have an updated old restroom facilities, or you've got a new adult wing, and you got a new to this, and you got a nice one, but the preschool children's facility, not so updated, right? Well, that speaks for our youth is almost not way out in a non-air conditioned trailer. They begin to go. We had a client like that. Brand new facilities. The committee, we had worked with this client four times. This was at that time, I think it was our third campus with them. But it was a Methodist church, and had a
female pastor. And she said that the committee was looking around and they were trying to discuss where the youth were on campus. And there were, some were going, I think it's at the end of that building upstairs. And the other guy, no, I think it's down there. So she looked at me with that, like, hey, Bruce, what does that say to you? I mean, a group of 12 could not figure out where youth was on their campus. I said, you know what? That clearly speaks to me as an architect and an outsider. This church doesn't value youth. They don't even know where they are on campus.
Right. For thought.
Right. And sometimes we forget those things as a church, that our facilities are playing a role, or and that could be positive or negative, right? So.
I love this image, but that's really ultimately what all this is geared towards. It's making an impact. It's, you know, it's bringing people to Christ, and really like this, the four walls, the roof, the ceiling. It's just space. It's a tool that we can leverage to create those opportunities to connect with people, to share the gospel, to disciple, and to ultimately, you know, grow as that church family. Because, you know, you can, we don't subscribe to the build it, they will come. You know, I mean, you could build a beautiful mecca of a facility, but it's empty if you don't, if it's not based in the strategic vision for how you want to do that ministry.
It's I'll come back to that new story, right? This church, we were being hired to design a new preschool children's facility. And they still need a new preschool children's facility. But the pastor, after seeing that committee struggle with not even knowing where the youth, let me put the in context also. They sit on George Bush, same George Bush, right? About 10 miles away. And Main Street in this community, pretty good address in a growing a town, actually a town I live in, but out by the lake and beautiful town. And sits across, diagonally across the interstate from a 6A high school. And you don't know where your youth are on campus? Guess what we ended up building? A really nice youth facility. An extremely nice. Because guess where she had the next meeting? Where the youth met. She goes, next week we'll be meeting where the youth meet. And metal buildings, temporary buildings on campus, one which was the air conditioner was not working at. And she had a meeting at. You want to know why we're not reaching youth?
You have to port across to the committee.
Huh? Right. Yeah. But I mean, so the point was, a ministry can sometimes die if maybe not purely because of facilities, but your foot, where you were, as far as that group was concerned, facilities are playing a huge part. And if there's another church down the street that, and we had done one across the lake, that how many had it was a 750 seat theater just for the youth, and probably 45,000 square foot facility for the youth. And guess where a lot of the youth from that 6A high school went? Across the lake into another city. Because they, not just because, but that church made them, hey, we value you here. We designed a facility with you in mind. We have made a place for you in our ministry. And, oh, the other church, hey, and they admittedly, they had lost a lot of people with those families. Well, yeah, because those families will end up, those kids members will sometimes be where the family goes, right? Those primary and middle school and high schoolers will roughly sometimes dictate where their parents want to go, because their parents want them to be involved in an active ministry. So facilities do make an impact. I think that's the main thing we wanted to bring, how facilities reach across traditions. Well, again, if there's one thing I think we've learned is you can't just stay stagnant as a church. You have to be relevant, would be another word we would use, in whatever setting you're in, whatever state, whatever city, whatever locale, whatever neighborhood.
Hold true to the truth.
Right.
We don't compromise on the core principles of what our faith is, but you still speak to the community in a language they understand. You know, to kind of come to where they are. Because it is all about breaking down barriers. And it really is creating those opportunities for students. That's what's going to draw people to church. So.
Anything we can answer for y'all, particularly about one of your campuses or challenges y'all faced or anything? Or?
How about education buildings? Here's where I'm at. I've told you, Bruce, I'm on the education side. And I have people come talk and says, well, what do you offer? What, you know, shoot straight with me. What do you got that works and what's your weakness? I said, we got it works. We got just a number one quality theological instruction. When you walk out of here, we got guys that graduate from our seminary and go to Europe and do PhDs. Of course, the European doctoral system is very rigorous. I said, so it's first grade. And we were starting out. That's what that was our plus. what's your negative? I said, try to find a student center. Find a place to congregate. We're using places on campus, but what are we
going to do? Places to study or places uniquely made for them with them in mind.
Yeah, in other words, what are you end up doing? I hate to say it. We're looking, are we intentionally mentoring and discipling our students? Because there's a lot of our faith that's caught.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, different class. And like, where you got it? We're meeting at professors' houses.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and as we grow, wow. Yeah. You know, we're, you know, like if I say, okay, I talk to someone, I'm going to go over to Wake Forest and meet you at Southeastern. Yeah. What do you say? Every time.
What we call that in our cycle, that's where a vision is set and you're growing and you're reaching people and you're doing things and the need is, and then you don't respond to the need. And there'll be a part where you can sometimes either stagnate or you'll see a decline. That's that vision without implementation. That's a quote. Vision without implementation is just what? A hallucination. Right? And so that's where we come in is you can have all the visions in the world. You can dream to have your church. I wish our church could do this. I wish our church could be this. I wish we had the ability. Well, you can dream it all day long, but until you begin to implement it and have a plan to implement it, that doesn't mean everything has to be a $20 million campus or, you know, $5 million campus. Make steps toward implementing that. And sometimes if you look at your facilities and go, man, our facilities just aren't relevant. Well, if you've got surrounding ones in the community that are, you are chasing uphill. And you may actually hit a peak, and you may see that the only way you recover is to respond with is our church fostering an environment that causes people to come here with a mindset of, wow, they've done this with me and my family in mind, versus there's actually a church down the street that really fosters to my family for in whatever way that is.
Well, and that's really what that's about. It's finding out if in some ways it's the why before you get to the what. So many times everyone wants to start with the what. Hey, we have a project, call an architect. All right, let's get building. We're going to design a building and go. One of the things that we believe in is saying, okay, we understand that, but why? We want to go back to the why. You know, is it the metrics that determine, you know, the need for the amount of space or the, you know, the financial implications, all that, the ministry why of the vision. Then we get to the what, then the how we get there. So like, you know, like your specific question is, you know, well, what do the students expect? What do they desire? If they like those intimate conversations that happen at the professor's house, how do we create that on campus?
Why are your spaces not facilitating that? And in what manner? Well, let's talk about why they want something else or why we need to do something to address this particular thing. Then like saying the what's actually the easy part. That's designing something that we think can utilize. But really sometimes answering the why is big miss in a lot of churches.
Is there something online, like a seminar that you just did, like the presentation that, like, I could go home and say, look at this website. This is kind of what I heard. And because I'm kind of in an awkward situation. We are the emeritus pastor.
You have to be circumspect. Yeah.
Heart,
but I see all this, I'm going crazy.
Right.
And so if I could just share.
Well, certainly they can meet on online. Let us get with you and see what we could do to help foster some of that. You know, one of the things, but you're in
Covington.
Paper mill. Okay.
A vital church.
Yeah, yeah.
Where's that at? Covington?
Virginia.
What's the closest large city?
Roanoke. Oh,
yeah. Well, we did a project in Roanoke years and years ago, about 30-something years ago. But we've done a lot of churches in Virginia. Plus churches in Virginia.
My son attends Our Grace Bible Church, not that
plan, right.
But the other one, the oldest one, in College Station.
Yeah, right there, right across the school. Yeah, that's where their seminary is at. Yep. Yeah, but, let's get with you and we can figure out what we can do to give some tools.
That's about to say, I mean, we can figure something out. Just reach out to them. Cheers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, it's funny. It's funny you mentioned the paper mill because my dad worked for Temple Inland in Evadale, Texas for, gosh, almost 20-something years until they got bought out by, they bought that.
West Rock or something. Mm-hmm.
And then he came out here to NC State with the College of Natural Resources. So anytime he hears you know, paper it.
Didn't they shut Cedar Dale down?
I think so.
Yeah,
yeah, it's fun.
That's very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this session from the 2021 Shepherds 360 International Church Leaders Conference. This material is copyrighted and may not be altered or sold. For information, visit shepherds360.org.